inspired by Srila Prabhupada to join the process of spiritual life because they felt there is no envy in Prabhupada's heart. There's one story about Prabhupada meeting Srinivas Prabhu from Mumbai. Srinivas Prabhu is disciple of Srila Maharaj, and he met Prabhupada, but he could not take initiation at that time, somehow or other. And he was a big businessman, and he is still a big businessman even up to today. He has a huge corporation, and he explains how when he met Prabhupada, because he was a businessman, Srinivas Prabhu was a businessman, he had always the characteristic to judge people and to try to see where is their weak point so he can take advantage of that weak point. It's businessman's mentality. So he was trying to examine Prabhupada and find some weakness in him. And after some meetings, couple of meetings with Prabhupada, he realized that this person is amazing. You know, I cannot find any greed in him, any lust, any envy. I can just not identify this weak point that other people have. He was completely amazed. And he realized this is not an ordinary person, this is a Bhaktivedanta, this is a transcendentalist. Because everyone in the material world has envy, greed, lust, anger, selfish kind of pride and consciousness. So this is the proof that there are such personalities, and that's why Krishna constantly sends representatives in this world, so that we know that the Srimad Bhagavatam is not some poetic exaggeration of some literary genius who just decided to write something nice, but actually by meeting the Bhaktivedanta, so the pure devotees, we understand that the Bhagavatam is actually real, because we know that there is the book Bhagavatam and then there is the person Bhagavatam, so we can actually see the Bhagavatam in action by meeting such a personality. So then the business of such a person who sees that the others are simply suffering despite all their luxury existence, the business of such a person is to take them out of illusion. Such a person becomes so absorbed in planning, scheming, how do I pull this person out of my head? This is also one of the characteristics of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, who were constantly thinking how to devise plans to liberate the ignorant mass of people in this universe. So everyone that reads this Bhagavatam, or everyone that follows in the footsteps of such Bhaktivedanta, they immediately join this family business. It's a family business. And what is this family business? It is not a business that is focused on profit, material profit. This business, family business, is to make other people profit. And how do they profit? By recognizing their spiritual nature and by recognizing their relationship with the source of everything, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this business is the greatest welfare activity, actually, because it is an activity that is meant to liberate the living entities. So it is an action that is geared towards making others profit. And generally, in the material world, business is not like that. Business is meant to make the businessman profit. You see. In fact, nowadays the business has become so unethical that the businessman's rule, or the manufacturer's rule, is that if you produce something, it should not survive more than 1 year and 6 months, that product. After that, it should be it should break, so that you can make new product and the customer can still spend money, and in this way you have a sustained income. You're constantly making something cheap, it breaks, and then the customer becomes dependent to buy the new version. So you can see that the tremendous difference between mundane business and the business of the Bhaktivedantas. Bhaktivedantas are completely unconcerned about any profit for themselves, even to the point of wanting to go to hell instead of everyone else. What kind of different consciousness is this? Vasudev Datta was an example of that. Prahlad Maharaj, he said, "My dear Lord, I do not want to return back to you in the spiritual world until all these fools and rascals are liberated from this material universe." And Vasudev Datta was prepared to burn in hell eternally, so that these suffering entities can actually return back into the spiritual world. So, what kind of a gratitude we must have for these kind of personalities? I cannot fathom the consciousness that they have. And if I really have to develop gratitude, it must be quite an amazing level of consciousness or gratitude that needs to be offered back to kind of have some reciprocation with their sacrifice. And Prabhupada said that you can never repay me actually for what I have done, never. But we can repay Prabhupada in some small way by assisting him in his mission to connect others to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because Prabhupada's heart, Prabhupada's heart is actually breaking when he sees the suffering of the other living entities. You know, this is like a Western way to say that one's heart is breaking. You're breaking my heart, you know, like people say. That means you're causing me so much pain, breaking my heart. So Prabhupada's feelings towards us is, or towards everyone in this world, is that when he sees us suffering, that breaks his heart completely. He's very compassionate. One time Prabhupada was in New York doing some preaching, and one devotee took him in the car from the temple to some venue, and Prabhupada was in this vehicle, and as usually he would sit at the back of the car on the back seat, and the devotee was driving the car, and it was like a beautiful sunshine, nice summer day in New York, and he was driving the car and he was feeling quite joyous with Prabhupada. And he was kind of chanting, you know, being happy. But suddenly he looked in the rearview mirror and he saw Prabhupada, and he saw some tears were pouring from Prabhupada's eyes. And he looked carefully and he saw, yes, it is true, Prabhupada is crying. So he asked him, "Prabhupada, is there something wrong? Is there anything wrong? Why are you crying, please?" And Prabhupada told him, "I am crying because all these people on the streets here in New York, how am I going to help them? I'm thinking they are all suffering in this material world." So when people engage in sense gratification, they're breaking Prabhupada's heart. and the heart of the Bhaktivedantas. On the contrary, a materialistic person, when he sees another person engaged in self gratification, they feel that I want to do this as well, I want to experience this kind of self gratification or anekosti. It's very different consciousness. So, here Prabhupada also speaks how Narada Muni was, he became quite disciplined and he became detached from childish sporting. Srila Prabhupada explains the purpose of Varnashradharma. Varnashradharma is to actually bring one to the actual human life. Generally, if people are not absorbed in spiritual life, if they are not performing some spiritual sadhana, the Vedas consider them to be on an animal platform, because the animals are simply just trying to maintain the body. So Varnashram Dharma is the process, the system given by the Lord, Chatur, Varna, Vaisushtan, Gunakarma, Vibhagatsita, given to mankind with the aim of elevating one's consciousness from this materialistic, animalistic platform to the human platform, and then the human being begins to discern between illusion and reality, between what is important and what is unimportant, and one invests time in that way to progress spiritually. So Prabhupada is explaining how it is so scientifically designed that the child, the young child, is given to the spiritual master to go to his ashram, and then the children are systematically trained in the process of devotional service. And that was there for all of them. Whether they were ordinary citizens or kings, as Prabhupada points out, they had to go to this ashram. Training was compulsory, not only to create good citizens of the state, but also to prepare it for his future, for the spiritual realization. Nowadays, we do not have this Varna Ashram Dharma the way it was established before. There is some aspect of the Varna Ashram there, but it is very much misdirected, and we can understand that it will not produce neither good citizens neither spiritual advancement. We can see all over the world we have more and more problems with crime. There is more and more suicide in the world, divorce, unwanted pregnancies, drugs, people are becoming more and more engaged in intoxication, drugs, alcohol, and they may be, in some sense, good citizens if there is a very strict law. Somehow other people may behave well as much as possible, but they are missing the spiritual realization because they are completely absorbed in material life. So the current education in the world is really lacking, and disempowering the human being to really attain spiritual life. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to give this transcendental literature to the people, and if they are fortunate enough, they could read the books, they could understand that there is a higher purpose to life than just engaging in sense gratification. So Prabhupada created such a system, such a program, such a society. This kind of a society created by Prabhupada, also out of compassion, so that even after he leaves, his legacy is still continued and people are still benefiting. What mercy is this? What kind of compassion is this? Even after he's left, he's still benefiting the people through his books, through his institution. I was hearing yesterday one lecture. Prabhupada said this one is an incarnation of Krishna. is performing the same function as Krishna. Why is it? Pranitranaya sadhana vinashya chaduskritam dhamma samstato vatena samvavami vipyam. ISKCON is protecting the devotees of the pious people, destroying the demonic mentality in this Kali Yuga through Harinam, food distribution, fruitful life, vinashya chaduskritam. All the duskritana consciousness is destroyed by these weapons of devotion. And then dharma samstapa bhaktaya, re-establishment of religion all over the planet. So ISKCON is actually an incarnation of Krishna. And ISKCON is Prabhupada's body. And Srila Prabhupada established this ISKCON just as an extension of himself. The essence of our movement is compassion towards others. So you can see that even in our case, not just in Narada Muni's case, we can say this is a story that happened some millions of years ago, whatever, thousands and thousands of years ago. But it doesn't happen now, but it is happening now. All of us, we were probably in such a condition as Narada Muni, having no qualification at all to receive the message of Krishna. But still, Prabhupada and the devotees made it available to us and we became absorbed, benefited, and we are now acting on the platform of Bhaktivedanta by distributing this knowledge to others, although we have no qualification. Similarly, Narada Muni had no qualification at all, but if you study the Bhagavatam and you count how many times Narada Muni appears, you'll see that he's one of the most frequent characters that appears on the pages of the Bhagavatam, and he appears always in connection to delivering someone from life, if you notice this. So, it is continuing that this same kind of practice is existing today, that people like ourselves, or people like myself, have been given this tremendous causeless mercy and benediction without even me deserving anything. And then now I have the opportunity to share Prabhupada's message with others and benefit them in that way. Join the family business of benefiting others. Isn't that amazing? How the Bhagavatam is just alive in modernity. We were all like Narada Muni's here sitting, being given that opportunity to function on the platform of Bhaktivedanta. So, final points. And the body is Prabhupada explaining, or the child is in this Varnashram Dharma. It is so scientific that the children conceived with a consciousness that is devotional, and even a spiritually advanced soul is attracted to entering into the womb of the mother. It's so scientific. It's really, really powerful. And it makes sense. In some of the African traditions, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj used to tell us, in Central Africa, there are some tribes, they still keep that tradition as well from the Vedic time, because the whole world was connected to the Vedas some over 5,000 years ago, according to the research that has been done by some of our devotees. They kind of wanted to see whether there is artifacts showing what Bhagavatam is stating. The Bhagavatam is stating that the whole world was actually Varanvarsha. And these devotees did research, so they found a lot of information. So the Vedic culture was spread all over the world, actually. And the Hastinapur was the capital, just like now Washington is the capital of the world. That time So this African tradition, I cannot remember which tribe was, but Central Africa. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj told us that they have a system. Before conception, the mother goes to the forest and she enters into very deep meditation for some days. And that meditation, she begins to hear the name of the child. Very interesting. She begins to hear the name of the child. Like a mantra. She starts to chant this mantra. Then she gives it to the husband. At the time of conception, they both chant this mantra, that particular name, which is connected to a specific soul that must come in her womb. When she is pregnant, she continues to chant this mantra. The time of birth, she continues to chant this mantra, this the name of that child at the time of birth as well. And then when the child is born, they give him that name. And then that name basically is acknowledged at different samskaras, ceremonies, and so on and so forth. And similarly, at the time of death, that mantra, that name again, is still chanted by this tribe. So these are remnants of the Vedic culture, and it shows how people were conscious of the act of bringing children to this world as something transcendental, something metaphysical, something extraordinary, as opposed to the modern society, which just gets into procreation without being prepared, and sometimes even in so on and so forth. So the Varnashatara is encouraging family planning and to perfect children who can attain perfection. And those children further trained by the Guru to be self-controlled, disciplined, and into the process of being obedient. This is a very amazing characteristic, to be obedient to the spiritual master. Again, in the material world, generally we don't want to obey because we feel that obedience to others limits our own personality and our own expression. So we don't want to obey generally to many things. If we can circumvent any type of obedience, we will do that. But of course, some obedience is there naturally. If we want to make money, we have to be obedient to the boss. If we want to get a university degree, we have to be obedient to the teacher. So we are obedient, but we don't like it. But in devotional service, the devotee likes to be obedient. His Holiness Radhanath Swami cites his letters to his co-brothers, the obedient servant. It's very difficult to be obedient, like to really be humble enough to accept the instruction of another person, to kind of obediently accept it, even if you feel that you want to do something else. So in that way, we're sacrificing the full seal on the altar of bhakti. And we really progress spiritually if we learn the art of obedience to the spiritual master. Yesha prashanam bhagavat prashanam, yesha prashanam nagati kutopi. No advancement is possible if we do not become obedient to the bona fide spiritual master. Prabhupada finishes here by saying that no one can become successful in following the instructions of the spiritual master, and without doing so, no one is able to go back to Godhead. So, the Bhaktivedantas, their aim is to try to encourage as many people as possible to return back to Godhead. And they consider their family business successful if they are managing to bring more and more people back to the spiritual world where there is no vices, like we mentioned in the beginning, like envy, greed, lust, anger. The spiritual world, there is a unity with the diversity. Everyone is unified in the principle of pleasing Krishna, Radha and Krishna, the mother father called the source of everything. Everyone is unified in pleasing them in various ways. And even if there is exhibition of jealousy and anger and different characteristics like this, they are simply increasing the ecstasy. They are like the spices of the subject, you know, in the spiritual world. But these qualities in the material world are extremely destructive and unfavorable to building positive relationships. So everything that comes in contact with Krishna becomes purified, becomes perfect, becomes beneficial. Therefore, Krishna is Param Satyam, is the supreme absolute truth. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions?
I am going to come in.
Yes, Prabhupada.
This happened in Melbourne also. Prabhupada was driving the punch road near Melbourne cricket ground, and he was in tears. So some devotee, Chittahari told me, he told us, Prabhupada in tears, and we asked him. So he said he just worried about these people who are just running around to warn the match and this and that, and wasting their time.
Yes.
Just chanting the holy name.
Yes.
So you are telling compassion, how compassionate is Prabhupada. That's why you put this ISKCON movement.
Very compassionate.
Amazing.
Yeah. Actually, we don't know how fortunate we are. It's an incredible fortune that we should not squander. Bhakti Charamaran says that you have received the greatest fortune, don't squander it. Just try to stick to Krishna in this lifetime and go back to Godhead. Prabhupada's statement, the devotees sometimes say that by hook or by crook, they say distribute the hook, but I say by hook or by crook, stay in this crook. Just don't leave ever. Don't ever consider doing something else but serving Prabhupada's mission. Once in Cape Town, Indrajyotna Maharaj gave lecture and he said that never leave ISKCON. He said, even if Krishna appears in your dream and tells you to leave ISKCON, don't leave ISKCON. And then he clarified, he said, sometimes Maya can dress as Krishna just to test you whether you really understand what is Krishna. Interesting, huh? And then he said, even if the walls of the temple fall, the whole temple falls, never leave ISKCON. Basically, you can see his full conviction that this is the topmost activity that one can do to be in service of Prabhupada's mission. So we are so fortunate, so extremely fortunate. And I pray that all of you remain your whole life fully dedicated to Prabhupada. And I pray that you get empowered by Srila Prabhupada to bring many, many Narasimhas to this movement. Small boys or young people or any personalities that apparently have completely no education, no qualification, but may you be able to bring them to Srila Prabhupada of his feet by his mercy. So this is an amazing purpose, amazing life that we have been given. I was thinking also this morning how for a lady, until she gets a child, sometimes she feels her life is empty, there is no purpose in her life. It's correct, right? And when one becomes a devotee, they feel that my life has no purpose unless I bring other devotees to Krishna. And Prabhupada said that, you know, when he had to depart from family life and take Manaprastha and Sannyasa, he said, you know, I left two children who were disobedient. They did not want to follow my instruction. Three or four children he had, but now I have thousands of children. You see. So in the same way, we should be anxious to have children so that we have purpose in life. Like that. Just like the mother. She's so anxious to have a child so she can find a purpose. She can feel really happy. So in the same way, all of us, we should try to understand the principle of Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samaha, that you know, we can see Krishna everywhere. We try to practice this principle and try to benefit each and every person we come in contact in some small way or other. Try to invite them into Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.